thing.
And welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Big day for you tomorrow. One more time, we'll be joined by Attorney General Steve Marshall, also Mayor Sims Dave Baker, Republican nominee for Congress in the 1st Congressional District, Jerry Carl, and Sean Ross of Yellowhammer News. So please, if you would, tune in for that. But joining us now, a friend of the show, or a friend of my show up in Huntsville, we'll make him a friend of the show here as well. State Representative Shane Stringer joins us in studio. Representative, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming in. Let's get right into it. First off, district, COVID-19, all these unusual circumstances and events going on in our lives. How is that going for your folks?
It's definitely a challenge. It's a new world we're living in, and everybody's adjusting daily and, you know, hopefully getting reacquainted and getting situated to handle all the new changes that we have facing us.
Yeah, and it seems like there's an adjustment period, but as far as I can tell, people are kind of going along and getting along with it. I guess the question is, then what? Like, where are we know we're going along to get along, but where are we headed? And that's the big question.
Yeah, and I hope that hopefully things will get back to somewhat of a normal for everyone. But, you know, I guess maybe we are going to have to face a new normal with some of the safety precautions that we're taking now. And, you know, I think once the peak of the COVID hits, you know, I think it's going to start to go down, and I think you're going to see things go back to somewhat of a normal.
Yeah, I think people are kind of adjusted to it. Maybe we've already seen that peak. Maybe we are heading in that other direction. But until we get that vaccination, then things are never going to be fully normal or as normal as we would like them to be.
That's correct. You know, and it's just, we're just going to have to meet it head on and just take things one day at a time and try to live our lives as normal as we can and try to, you know, make sure that we're adjusting and just being careful.
Well, and you know, you with your background in law enforcement and understanding that aspect of it, I had Hoss Mack on in the last hour, but those challenges that's gotta present some unusual challenges for law enforcement in maintaining law and order. I mean, you see what's going on all around the country right now, but here in Alabama, in the back of your mind, knowing there seems like just the span of, let's say, the difference between what we were doing in 2019 on this day versus now, there seems to be a whole longer list of things you've got to be aware of if you are in a police department or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's some challenging times for our law enforcement profession. You know, not only are they having to be vigilant of the COVID and you know, not only for their safety, but the safety of the people that they have to arrest or come in contact with, but they're also having to deal with all the uncertainties that with the unrest that's going on across this country. I mean, yeah. We have law enforcement officers getting shot and killed for no reason, and we've even had it here in Alabama. You know, it's scary. I have a son that's a law enforcement officer, and it scares me, you know, that someone could just go up and kill him for no reason.
Yeah, and we, especially in Alabama, had last year before we're talking about any of these new issues, there was a kind of a weird phenomenon with these law enforcement officials killed in the line of duty. And you kind of wonder, well, it keeps happening. Is there a policy solution, or were we just in difficult times?
You know, it's always challenging, and this ain't just started. This has been going on for centuries, and dealing with the relationship of law enforcement and the public. You know, we have to constantly, you know, ultimately, as a administrator in law enforcement for years, all I ask of my employees is to treat people the way they wanted to be treated. And if we do that, you can't go wrong. You know, law enforcement executives, if they will, you know, do what they're doing, which is police ourselves, and let's try to eliminate problems and deal with the issues at hand, we're gonna stay in front of this. And our area has been extremely blessed with good administrators that do that.
Yeah, you know, and avoiding the worst of these scenarios, it seems, been either very, very fortunate, but there's also that, I guess, an element of the professional training, the police academies. Do you think the way we're talking nationally, we always talk about these issues as a, you know, the federal one size fits all approach, but is there more to be done to better equip some of the local law enforcement with some better skills or things like that, you think?
Yeah, we're working on that. You know, law enforcement is constantly evolving. They're constantly reevaluating things, trying to do better in situations such as body cameras, car cameras, and that type situation. The training issues, we're always looking at new and better way of training, and sometimes we have to train our we have to change our way of thinking. You know, you have to think outside the box on some of this stuff to address it. You know, of course we're having to talk more about diversity training and make sure that we're staying, we have a lot more of the departments that are looking at checks and balances, which is, you know, having some systems in place to hopefully catch problematic employees so we don't have these problems. But, you know, and at the end of the day, you're dealing with human nature. You're going to have some issues from time to time.
It's interesting that you talk about, you know, kind of what's going on with law enforcement, but there's the other side of that. What's going on in society that's leading us to this point where we need more, you know, the law enforcement? You have these, you know, every time we have a mass shooting, we go right into the discussion about mental health. And then I know that you guys did some work on mental health in this last session.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes some of those components to dealing with the root problem gets lost right now. But do you think we're going to see strides made in that area with the mental health component?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's getting better every day. Of course, you know, every legislation, you know, tenure, they have their set of problems, and years ago there was evidently some issues that caused the mental health to be defunded and put away, and we're seeing the consequences of that over the years. Some of the stuff that we've done in this past legislative session, which is, you know, trying to build more mental health facilities, get more funding there, is going to help these problems. You know, it's just going to have to, it's going to take a little while before it starts to show the fruits of its labor.
Well, let's transition to that. The big topic, prison reform,
mm-hmm.
getting the prison situation under control, an extension of law enforcement, I would argue. There's always been this notion that Republicans are anti-prison. They just assume, you know, no money spent on prisons. We need to spend that money elsewhere. But if it seems like if you really are a law and order Republican, then it would behoove you to be, you know, wanting to fix the problem with the Department of Corrections in Alabama's prisons, that it's not taboo as a Republican member of the legislature to say, hey, we need to do something about this. Does it seem like there's kind of a change there, that the Department of Justice's act?
Yeah.
And now the ball's maybe in the state's court.
Yeah, I think it's a prime example of pay me now, pay me later. You know, we've neglected the prisons over the years for so long, and to the point that now, you know, we're fisting out to pay the consequences. But, you know, we have definitely got to get the prisons in a better working order and safer conditions for our correction officers. That it is unacceptable that our correction officers are in the conditions they're in. And, you know, at the end of the day, we still got to, we're responsible for the welfare of the inmates and the prisoners, and we've got to make sure that we're doing our job there.
Is it just as simple as building new prisons, but are there's going to have to be a lot more done, right?
Yeah, this is going to be a long-term fix here to working on this. We've got to, you know, we've got a lot of issues. We've got employment shortages, you know, just like everyone else in law enforcement. You know, we approved for them to hire 500 correction officers last year, and the last I heard, that was they had hired less than 50. You know, that's terrible.
It's tough to get these guys to go work for two reasons. A lot of these prisons are in kind of remote places, so
they
don't have a big labor pool to begin with.
Yep.
But it's just not a job that, you know, who wants to be a prison guard when you have these middle ages diseases going on and things. It's a hazard. It's a safety hazard for you to take this job. So, like, how much is enough? What's your price to be a prison guard? And I, you know, that's got to seem like it's astronomical.
Yeah, we've got to do some do some work to try to make this job appeasing to some people. You know, we've got to do more than what we're doing. And it ain't always just about money. It is about the safety, and it is about the appreciation and taking care of your employees. The prisons are, you know, it's gonna take a lot to fix this. This ain't just a money issue.
Yeah, and it's getting to that point where finding the right plan, I think it may in some ways be easier to find the money than to find a plan everybody can agree on. You know, do you get that sense from your colleagues?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely the issue. You know, the money is not as much the issue as it is.
It's not even ideological. It's geographic in some ways, seem to be some of the divisions.
It is. And you think about this. Our state, the state of Alabama, is extremely blessed with a lot of great high-paying companies here, especially the Mobile County area with Austal, Airbus, Walmart Shipping Center, all of these steel mills, everything that we have going on. Well, they pull so many employees because of the money that it makes it extremely difficult for law enforcement and our prison systems to recruit and hire people.
Yeah, and that leads me to my next question. The Governor Ivey appears to be working on a plan. The details not yet known. They could be coming at any time. It's August or September. But what's your feeling on the governor going at it on her own to build new prisons? I know you're kind of new to the legislature, but before that, it's always been a hurdle that could never be overcome. But now we have a solution. It seems that the governor could use executive authority to build these on her own.
Well, I mean, she has a lot on her shoulders, and she's having to make some tough decisions. But I do have a problem, and I'm kind of concerned about the private partnerships that we're looking at doing and building these prisons. You know, I think you're opening up the door to allow these companies to charge the state whatever at any point, you know, and I think we really need to look at that. I mean, I think with our economy, even in this pandemic, we're still surviving, and we're still doing okay. The SSUT tax has kind of helped float us and keeping us afloat. But I think we need to be looking at other financial avenues to deal with this other than the private partnerships.
Yeah, well, you know, why couldn't the legislature just, why couldn't it be bonded out to borrow the money? And it seems like you would save the taxpayers a lot more money if the legislature just took a stab at it. But they're not even, you talk to leadership, but they seem to be, you know, this is the best path forward. It's the fastest. It's the best way to get the Department of Justice kind of off our back.
Well, I don't think we should rush through this, you know, regardless of whatever the situation. You know, we've got to address the problems, and I think we've got a lot of qualified people. You have more legislators with law enforcement background than you've ever had that are asking the right questions, that are asking the questions that need to be asked in addressing and dealing some of these problems.
I mean, they understand the prison issue is more than just a law enforcement, I mean, more than just an economic issue. When was it, George Wallace, the last time the Department of Justice came in and George Wallace was governor, and he turned Alabama's Department of Corrections into this jobs program, built all these prisons around the state to spark economic activity, which worked kind of okay for a while. But now you got to get back to what the intended purpose is for these correctional institutions, and it's to correct. We've lost that along the way. Is there any hope that the way things are going, that the mission is back to what it ought to be?
That's something that's got to be addressed. You know, we've just got to, the director's got to look at some of those issues, and some of them have got to be brought to his attention through the legislation or the leadership or the government, you know, or the governor in trying to address some of these problems. If not, then we're going to keep doing the same thing that we're doing, and that's obviously not working.
Yeah, so this will be something you guys will have to talk about. It doesn't appear to me that there will be a special session, that you're going to have to wait till the next general session in 2021. Do you think that's going to be okay? Do you think that, given that gap and you guys not meeting in Montgomery and the abbreviated session this year, that you're going to, that it could wait, it could be kicked down the road at least until next year?
I don't think so. You know, I think we need to have a special session to address some of these issues, and especially the prisons, and, you know, give the legislators a say-so in this. You know, we represent the people of our districts throughout the state, and, you know, the people want to have some kind of a say-so in this. You know, it's going to be sad if we get into a private partnership that really takes a lot of the taxpayer money, you know, not just my generation, but for generations to come. You know, and who's to say that this won't continue? We won't be renting these facilities forever.
Right. Well, and I think you echo the concerns of a lot of your colleagues. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get back into some things once we get on the other side of the break, dealing with COVID-19. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
On the drum, they stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a... Hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So get around, now gather around, chill and be down. Well, just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. You will, because the South's gonna do it again and again.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Tuesday morning to you. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall will be with us. We'll also have Sims Mayor Dave Baker. Jerry Carl, the Republican nominee for Congress here in the 1st Congressional District, and from Yale Hammer News, Sean Ross. A lot of reasons for you to tune in tomorrow. But still with us in studio, we're very grateful for that. State Representative Shane Stringer sitting here. Representative, something I neglected to mention. We were talking about, you passed a gas tax back in the very first part of the quadrennium. We start to see some road projects underway here, particularly in your district. You got two major thoroughfares with 45 and 98, looking at improvements to those. Are you starting to see some of those orange barrels up and some progress being made?
Not really in our district yet. I have been meeting with Director Cooper pretty regular, and we're working on, you know, trying to finish up the 158 project there in Sims. And of course we're shooting and politicking hard to try to get something done with Highway 98, finish the four lane on it, and then of course the big project is going to be four lane and Highway 45 from the Mississippi line, which is up in Representative Easterbrook's district all the way down to Pritchard through my district.
That 45 has been something talked about since I was a child, of getting it four lane. It's four lane to the Mississippi line in Mississippi. It's just when you cross that, it's just narrows, and you hear people talking about it. Is there any sense? Is it just been that it's just a part of the state that the ALDOT has never really given second much thought to? It seems like an afterthought. I mean, really, what has been the hurdle there in getting that done?
I don't know. It's, you know, of course, I have my opinions. You know, I think it's kind of been neglected, but, you know, I don't know if we're pushing hard enough for it. I'm constantly in Director Cooper's ear now, and when I first started meeting with him, he, you know, let me know that there was approximately 30 roads throughout the state in a similar condition and similar traffic, and at that time, you know, he told me we were probably about 18th to 20th in line for that, you know. So I've constantly updated him on stuff, and then of course over time, the last time I met with him, he told me that we were probably 5th or 6th in line. So
well, I just to hear him say 18th or 9th, I mean, 45 is not a new road. It's been this way for a very, very long time, and to be neglected the way it is, it is 18th, 19th on that list for a reason. That it is, you know, it may just be a product of state politics that anything south of Monroe County or whatever is just an afterthought to a lot of these guys.
That's sure the way it feels. You know, I'm watching my colleagues across the state posting stuff on social media about road projects from the infrastructure tax, the gas tax, in their districts, and we're not able to post none of that.
And you voted for the gas tax.
I
you
did.
Supported the Rebuild Alabama,
yes,
Act. These guys that voted against it, maybe you could see
that
they're not getting those projects, but you voted for it.
Yeah, we're going to keep fighting, and matter of fact, I'll be meeting with Cooper again next week or two, and you know, we're just going to keep fighting until we get it done.
Well, best of luck to you. The music's playing, so that means we got to call it a day. But thanks for coming in.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
That was State Representative Shane Stringer. This has been the Jeff Porsche Show at FM Talk 106.5.